We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to another episode of In the Know. I'm Shamit, joined by Mason, and we're here to discuss the Pelicans, like always. Mason, what's up? How you been? How is Thanksgiving?
Pretty good. Still in New Orleans, just kind of working from home for a few days before we had me and some buddies heading to Dallas for the weekend for Saints Cowboys. It was good. Good time with the family. Celebrated my grandmother's 90th birthday too. So some quality family time, and it's nice to be able to spend a little more time at home. But how about you?
That's pretty awesome, man. Mine was a lot of the same. Spent it with some family and family friends, and then went out and did some shopping for some video games. I didn't buy much of anything else. It was a lot of video games that I really wanted that were on sale. I'm playing the new Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is set in ancient Greece. And you get to play as a mercenary of sort, or assassin, spoiler alert. But it's really cool because, you can choose to be on like the side of the Athenians or the Spartans, and the things you do within the game like really have downstream effects. So like you may make a decision at one point and it turns out impacting the game at a later point. So it's pretty cool. It's a pretty big open world game. And that's just what I've been playing. I picked up a couple others, but I think nice. I'm going to stick with this one for a while.
Nice. Man, I still have the most updated gaming system I have is a PlayStation 3, and I haven't bought video games in like, I played NBA 2K and I played Call of Duty, and then like, I guess I kind of stopped playing around 4 years ago, but I don't know why, because I enjoyed it. I just kind of fell off. There's some things you just feel like you don't, there's not enough hours in the day, I guess, but I kind of wish I hadn't. But you didn't like you did you go out on Black Friday and deal with those crowds or
what
you did,
crowds, bro? Everyone was trying to get to the Saints game or watch it. I like swooped in right during that, and I was like, I'm gonna get me some sales, and it worked out. There was like, I was in and out of Best Buy in 15 minutes, man. It was like no problem. That's probably awesome. Like less rush on like a regular day. I mean, yeah, like it was a breeze. Nice. I didn't go anywhere else. I don't know. It was just Best Buy. I did the rest of my shopping online.
Well, maybe you should have gone during one of the Pelicans games this weekend instead of the Saints game. that may have worked out better for your happiness level.
Yeah. So about that, the Pelicans have lost, what, four straight now?
Three on the road trip, one at home. Yep, to three teams that were at or below 500, which is not great.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I feel like they've managed to lose each of them in different ways. I know a lot of there's been some common themes, and particularly tonight, the most common is the turnovers, right? And I feel like that's been sort of a recurring one where we cough the ball up and we don't get a chance to make an offensive play, and then they run it down and the opposing team scores on us. And tonight we had 22 turnovers. 22. It's really hard to win a game with 22 turnovers.
Yeah. Eight for Drew. I mean, that's just, I mean, he's not usually, I haven't looked at his turnover rate this year compared to prior seasons, but the number just stands out because he's just being asked to do so much without Elfrid Payton healthy for this team. I mean, there is no secondary ball handler for the Pelicans in any sense, and that's just it's just killing them, especially against the better, smarter defensive teams like the Boston Celtics, who can just swarm and know how to game plan for something like that. And it was a rough game tonight.
Yeah, I mean, Gentry mentioned it before the game started that Drew is really asked to do a lot. You know, he's asked to, I think the way Gentry phrased it was, he's asked to go score 20 points. He's asked to guard the best player on the other team. He's asked to get a bunch of assists. He's asked to run the team. And that's so much responsibility on one guy. And to his credit, Drew's been phenomenal. And, you know, it's unfortunate that he had an 8-turnover game tonight. Surprisingly, I just looked up his turnover rate. It's not even close to his career high. It's up there, but actually it's not even up there. It's like not that far. Like his career rate is 15.9%. He's at 16.9%. So it's not like that high. And I think part of it's like because we play at such a high pace and there's just so many more possessions that the overall percentage is lower. I mean, 2 years ago he was at 16.7% and he's at 16.9% now. So it's not that much of a difference.
You know? And it's just, and you can just see it just by looking at the box score. I mean, you look at the plus minus of the Pelicans core guys. Like Nico was the only guy who was making anything consistently from 3-point range, finished 25 points. He was minus 12, 37 minutes. AD, 37 minutes, 11 of 12 from the free throw line. I mean, 27 points and 19 shots, very efficient game for him as well. And 37 minutes, he was minus 12. And then Drew, who was 4 for 8, 7 assists, 8 turnovers, and that same in 37 minutes as well, he was only minus 2. And it's not even that Drew had a fantastic game. It's just that when he's not in the game, there's nothing there to sustain the Pelicans' offense. And so it's just, and to mean to your point, to Gentry's point, I mean, he's just asked to do so much for this team right now.
Yeah, man. I mean, first of all, I'm glad you mentioned Mirotić. I'm a big Mirotić fan, and I'm going to continue to be a big Mirotić fan throughout the season. Y'all are going to hear me say a lot about this guy. But you're right that there's no one behind Drew, and I think it was best seen tonight when it felt like Gentry was literally throwing stuff against the wall to see who would work at point. We saw Frank out there. We saw Ian out there. We saw Etuan out there. We saw Tim Frazier out there randomly in the fourth quarter. Just randomly, you know, hasn't played all game. You can put him in for the first 4 minutes of the fourth quarter. Solo Hill got 20 minutes tonight. Just to, I don't know, maybe he can do something.
Best plus minus? Oh, no, sorry. Best plus minus on the team, excluding Tim Frazier's 5 minutes. At zero.
Right. So he was a net neutral, which I wasn't. There weren't many complaints that I had about Solo tonight outside.
Right.
There was I think there was a moment where he just stared at a rebound.
Yeah, didn't box out. I remember that play.
It was like, okay. But he was fine. I don't think, like, you know, he hurt us. I'm surprised Wes only got 17 minutes because it seemed like he was one of the few people who was able to put the ball in the hoop. But it was a rough night. I mean, AD wasn't exempt from the turnovers. He had 5 himself. So when your 2 best players are combining for 13, that's a whole team's worth of turnovers, you know? And then you still had 9 others to account for to total 22.
Yeah, it's, you know, there were not many positives out of this game, obviously, but I got home and I went to this game with my mom, and I was talking to my dad about it. I was like, yeah, you know, Randall just didn't seem like that good of a matchup for the Celtics team. He didn't really have a good game at all. I looked at his stat lines. He got 15 points and 8 shots, and I totally whiffed on that. And I know he definitely struggled relative to what we've come to expect from him so far this season, but another monster efficient game from a scoring perspective. And I am thinking back on that, I am surprised that he played so little for the Pelicans tonight, especially with offense being such an issue for a lot of the game. I know they closed the first half with the 3 big lineup, but they really didn't even try to go back to it in the second half. Did that surprise you at all, or did that kind of make sense?
I mean, I've been begging for that lineup. So, like, I'm at wit's end as to why they won't give it more of a run. And it's honestly surprising considering, you know, the messaging this summer was, hey, we have a bunch of super talented, versatile bigs. They can all play off of each other. And they can possibly play with each other, and we're going to look to try that, right? And then another statement was made, something along the lines that because our bigs are so talented, we're not going to try to match up or match down with opponents. They're going to have to match us, right? Before the game, I asked Coach Gentry, I was like, hey, you know, with as strong as Boston is on the perimeter, they like to go small. Will you try to take advantage of that by going bigger and using the skill that you have on your roster? And I got a very non-committal response in the sense that we're going to play the way we're going to play. That's not something that we think about. And, if they're going small, we're not thinking, oh, we're going to go counter with bigs or vice versa. We're just going to go out and try to execute. And on the surface level, that's a totally fair statement. You want to do what you've game planned as a team to do, but I don't agree with the fact that we've all of a sudden, it seems like we've moved on from this whole we got these awesome bigs and we're going to play them all together. Now it's just like, yeah, okay, we have them. We'll use them when we need to, instead of this is our strength. This is our identity.
Yeah,
we scaled back from that just a little bit.
Yeah, and I agree, especially when you lose a guy like Peyton, who's very important to you in running your offense and playing the way you want to play. Even if he's not, say, you're one of your top 4 best players, it still matters, and you need to cover that talent gap somehow. They're at 32 minutes played together, the 3 of them, and what blows me away the most, and granted, Gentry definitely uses them in situations where he thinks it'll benefit the team, but their defensive rating with those 3 in those 32 minutes is 88.
Any lineup that they basically put out there.
Yeah, considering they're a bottom 5 defensive team this year, I mean, it does surprise me that it hasn't been.
I think it's bottom 3 now.
Yeah, so 106.3 offensive rating and then 88 defensive rating. It's just it's different than anything we've come to see from this team. I think I'm looking at NBA.com, and so it should include tonight.
How many minutes are they at total?
They're at 32 for what I'm looking at.
Wow, they got 12 minutes? No, they didn't get 12 minutes tonight. They got 12 minutes since the time I last looked at them. That's crazy.
Should be more. But, yeah, it's, again, just kind of surprising against, especially against, I'm not sure what, there are always pros and cons no matter who you're going to throw these guys up against.
Never mind. Continue.
No, all good. Yeah, I mean, I get the Celtics are kind of they're a very lengthy team, and it's and I don't know, maybe you don't think your guys have the kind of the lateral quickness with that kind of three big lineup to stay in front of guys. I'm not sure, but I feel like it kind of worked in the little time we saw in the second quarter, and it would have been nice to see it a little more down the stretch.
Yeah, definitely. What's, you know, I think the Celtics had a game plan of we're going to seal off the paint, and you can try to beat us from the outside, or you can try to drive at us. And, like, we had nowhere to drive to, nowhere to bend or break their defense. They just sat there. It's kind of like how the Spurs used to play. It's like how the Spurs played Miami, like, in the finals. They just, they're like, all right, go ahead. Do what you want on the outside. Pass the ball on the perimeter all you want. We'll close out to you because none of you guys can attack closeouts by putting the ball on the floor. And we'll contest your threes or outside shots if you're going in. And honestly, if like Nico didn't get hot, the score would be like even more lopsided, you know?
Yep. Yeah. So. 6 of 11 from three for him. And you know, they definitely needed it to even stay close. I mean, they had, I thought Kyrie was phenomenal tonight. Just, he was making so many tough shots. He carried them. And then when, and late in the game, Al Horford really stepped up in a big way for him. Tatum was kind of taking some shots that made me feel like he was helping to keep the Pelicans in the game. I think he got a
game all season. You know, when they make the jokes about him being Kobe, like that's what he's trying to do and he's not being good at it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he kind of piles the numbers down the stretch of the game. He finished with 20 points and on 14 shots. Time. Yeah, but yeah, really, really impressed with. I mean, as a, he's not surprising, but Kyrie played a great game. Horford did a good job. I thought, you know, Morris hit a couple tough threes with hands in his face, and
he had some tough shots. He was making timely shots. I expected Marcus Smart to make them, and Marcus Smart was 2 for 5 from three. Like, that's a good night for Marcus Smart.
Yep. And I thought Baines in the first half particularly did a good job on AD defensively. I think he,
Stevens is a genius. They would put Baines in any time that we had Randall in, and they'd put Baines on Randall, and they're like, forget about him. Just forget about Randall anytime he doesn't have the ball. And if he does have the ball, just sit there in the paint. And if he scores on you, he scores on you. If he doesn't, then great. But they sealed it off. He was out there playing like linebacker or like free safety. And he just kind of sat out there and mucked up our entire offense because Brad Stevens, like, Randall's a total non-threat off the ball. And I don't know, you know, if it was just because of, like, there's a big doing that and they were already in a good position to seal off the offensive glass or what it was, but, like, we didn't attack the offensive glass with near the same intensity we have in games past.
Yeah, and that, just explaining it to me the way you just did, makes me just wonder even more why we wouldn't try the three big lineup, because now you suddenly add Nico into those two guys, and now it's even tougher to deal with those three bigs all at once. So,
right.
I don't know. Can't read Gentry's mind, but your comments about Stevens and having the right game plan was, you know, seemed like he gave more than just Randall a tough night. Etuan couldn't really get going either.
That's a good point, and I think Gentry said it best in the post game interview. He said, Boston did a really good job of blowing up our dribble handoffs. Mason, how does Etuan Moore score primarily?
Etuan Moore scores in one of two ways. That would be one of them, and spot up threes would be the other. And not just spot up threes, to his credit. I mean, he's done well to expand his his game, and he can hit shots in more ways than just spotting up. But those are definitely the two biggest. And so I mean, it's not hard to scout out. It's harder to put in place a defense that can stop it, and you need the certain personnel to do it. But it was done very effectively tonight.
So I said before this podcast, and I'm not going to go on a rant, but I'm going to go on a mini rant. Just a mini one, okay?
Go ahead.
Etuan Moore is a fantastic role player. We are arguably using him to the best of his abilities. Like, I do not think you can optimize his skill set any better. Like, the fact that we discovered that he's really freaking good at making floaters, like, that's a cool discovery in and of itself, and we're putting him in a position to utilize the fact that he's really good at floaters, which is a really oddly specific thing to be good at in the NBA. And it's traditionally a low percentage shot, which he is made at a very high clip. I mean, we've discovered he's a really good catch and shooter. He can, if he's open, he can make a three. What he cannot do is attack closeouts off a three. The most he does is a one dribble pull up for mid range.
That's the Darius Miller special.
The Darius Miller, yeah. And then he cannot create off the dribble. If he dribbles too much, I start getting anxious, but not as anxious as I get when he tries to make an entry pass. And yeah, he doesn't create off others. He's not very good at running the pick and roll. And it's great because we've taken all of those responsibilities away from him for the most part, right? We're like, okay, you're not the best at dribbling. What are we gonna have you do? We're gonna have you cut without the ball. And I mean, that's what a dribble handoff effectively is it's a pick and roll like without the ball in your hand, because you're curling around the guy with the screen, and then the guy who's handing off the ball with you is either going to roll or pop out depending on what you're doing. Like, how many times does Etuan curl around AD, get the pass, and then the defense then has to decide whether, they're going to take away AD or he's going to get the floater, and they gave him the floater mostly. But Boston was sitting on that play, and good teams in the playoffs are going to sit on that play. And if our offense is a steady diet of Etuan more floaters, and if we can't get those going and it falls apart, then are we really a good offense to begin with? That's probably a loaded question. I'm probably saying that from an emotional place and not a logical place. We are a good offense when we're not coughing the ball up 22 times. But I think it just shows the limitations of the team. It shows the definite ceiling that, a team like Golden State in the playoffs, a team like San Antonio in the playoffs, they're going to anticipate those plays. A team like Utah, there's good defensive teams will know the scouting report. Well, they know what we're going to look to do. They're going to take that away. So I think it just all goes back to the need. Like I think you were saying, is Drew Holiday needs help. You need someone that can create. You need someone that can create for others. You need someone that can put others in a position to do what they do best by taking the ball away from their hands.
Yeah, and I think I was going back and forth with McNamara a little bit during the game, and I think his point was one of his last point to me was a good one in the sense that the Pelicans, I think they were anticipating going into the season with both Rondo and Elfrid Payton, and now we've spent most of the season with neither, and so.
But at the same time, you can't anticipate going in with Rondo and then anticipate having Randall too. It was one or the other.
That was going to be my next point. It's still, every day since the day that kind of that unintended swap happened, I'm taking Randall to even now 10 times out of 10.
Yeah,
I think we
close.
Both agree. Right? Yeah, it's not close. That said, it's still, it's, the Pelicans kind of had to adapt on the fly. And I still think, Peyton was a necessary addition, but now we're sitting here and having this conversation about, well, Drew can't do it all on his own, and what's the solution? And so, and I think we'll probably get into that on a different podcast, different conversation. But it is noted, and it's definitely a concern in the short term.
Yeah, the last thing I want to say on that topic is if your team's success hinges upon Elfrid Payton, how good of a team are you?
Is that
a fair question?
It is, which is funny because I feel like before the season, at least I did. I don't know if you did. Jason, that was kind of his thing. He said that how good this team is kind of depends on how on Elfrid Payton, and I thought that was kind of crazy.
Especially with you know how much Alfred was totally dismissed this summer by a lot of fans.
Yep. I mean, to a degree, myself included. Your Gentry Ball article definitely helped me become a little bit higher on him than I was before. But it was. I think Jason, where he hit a home run on that kind of assertion was just the role that Alfred Payton was going to play more than the actual player of Alfred Payton. And so it's definitely showing up now. And so I don't know if it's that, you know, if you need Alfred Payton, how good are you really? It's just that having that type of player or that role filled by somebody competent, so Drew doesn't have to shoulder this much of a burden for 82 games. I mean, we saw down the stretch, Drew can play point guard in crunch time. Like that's not a concern for the Pelicans, but if he's playing 35 to 40 minutes a night, doing all that the team is asking him to do on both ends right now without a real point guard, that's going to wear on this team, and that's going to be a problem. We're starting to see it.
And you know what the worst thing about this is? We've only talked about the offensive end. Arguably the worst part about the team, because this is a good offensive team for the most part, is the defense. We can't defend anyone. And when you look at it, you have one rim protector, that's AD. You have one perimeter defender that you can rely on night in, night out, that's Drew. And then you have a bunch of crap packed in the middle of that. And you're asking people to play out of position or overextend themselves in ways maybe they're not used to or they haven't before. And a lot of people just are out of their depth. And it's difficult because when AD is gone or hurt, who do you have protecting the rim? No one, right? When Drew sits, what is your perimeter defense? When Drew and AD both sit, what are you even doing? So, and again, like, I'm not trying to say that this is like a poorly put together team or anything. That's the furthest point I'm trying to make. All I'm trying to say is there are bigger concerns than offense. And some of them maybe can be mitigated by just health. Having Alfred back, having AD back, having an engaged AD back. That covers for a lot of things. And then, you know, some of it can be maybe mitigated by maybe reevaluating the system. I haven't taken a really big look into it yet. I'm planning on it. But, you know, I feel like if I could pick one thing to address, like turnovers or defense, I'd pick defense.
Yeah, I'm fully in line with that, because even with the turnovers, this is still a at worst an above average offense, and at best, you know, a damn good one. And the craziest thing to me, and I'm sure to a lot of the coaching staff, is that this team once last season, which is effectively a lot of the same guys. I mean, flip, you know, and conceivably taking Rondo and or Payton and putting in someone else, while it's going to hurt you on offense, that it's a good, you can make the argument that it should have helped on defense. And so this team that was a top 10 defensive team down the stretch last year I think it was pretty much a 30 game sample of with Nico and without Cousins, and granted top 10, it's not that much different than league average. I mean, they're closer to league average last year down the stretch than they were in the top team, defensive team in the league, but still it was a good defense for about 30 games. And the core people in that lineup were Rondo, Jrue Holiday, Etuan Moore, Nico, and AD. And so I'm sure the question that everyone has is what happened, you're supposed to, and granted Hill's been a mess largely, but you're supposed to get him back healthy. And you know, the hamstring injury is one that typically heals pretty well, and so you'd hope no lingering effects there. I think most people thought this is a top 10 or a fringe top 10 defensive team that should hopefully be better on offense because you're getting a guy like Julius Randle. and hopefully whatever increased chemistry you have with these guys who are playing together a little bit more. So it's just, I think it's pretty surprising to see this kind of immense drop off in defense from last year to this year.
Yeah, and to be fair, some of those, not some, probably a lot of those numbers are skewed by AD missing games and and not being himself in some of the games.
Yeah, he had, I think I was listening to Duncan and LaRue's 5 or 6 minutes on the Pelicans today, and I think, I haven't looked at the numbers, but Nate said they're, I think, 107 defensive rating with AD on the floor, which isn't fantastic, but it's probably about league average at this point. So it's not like they're still a train wreck defensively with him on the floor, but it's definitely, they've definitely taken a step back since last year.
Yeah, and if you look at the Pelicans starting lineup with Peyton, or even if you look at the two-man combos with Mirotić and AD, because I was looking at how the various bigs are playing together with each other, lineups that include Mirotić and AD have a defensive rating of 102, which is good, and it's consistent with last year. So there's still a good defensive lineup with those two. It's just, you know, when AD is off the floor, everything goes to hell.
Yep.
So the last thing I wanted to talk about today is after the game, it was kind of funny. So we went to go to the post game, and, you know, Gentry did his usual post game, and, you know, he pointed at turnovers being an issue, second chance points being an issue for Boston because they had, I think, 14 offensive rebounds. And uncontested threes. They got a lot of threes on us. And so that was cool. You know, after that, we went to the locker room to get quotes from the players. And sometimes after bad losses, what the players will do is they wait out in the back and try to, like, play this little mind game. Or not a mind game, but they have a little battle of it's almost a war of attrition with the media. And they'll try to wait out everyone and only come out when there's like maybe like one or two people left. So that way they can, you know, they'll have like one or two questions and they can just leave, right? And so today a lot of that was going on. The media is just kind of waiting around, waiting for AD or Drew to come in. And, you know, like at some point, like basically an hour has gone by. Still no sign of them. And then finally, I think the Pelicans decide to call it. They're like, it's late. They're not going to come out. Sorry. Go home. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. But before I do, I did want to say, like, personally, like, I'm not a professional journalist, so I don't have deadlines. It didn't impact me in any way whatsoever other than, you know, I guess I lost an hour of my life that I won't get back. But I chose to put myself in that position, so that's on me, you know. It is a bit disrespectful to the people who are trying to do their job. That's what they're paid to do, and they have deadlines. And, you know, sometimes they need quotes to do that, to do it effectively, right? But that doesn't mean they can't, I guess, write without, you know, if you don't get a quote from AD, it's not the end of the world. If you don't get a quote from Drew, it's not the end of the world. So I think from a larger perspective, it's not a big deal. But yeah, I guess I wanted, do you agree? I guess there's some people think that this is, I don't want to say cowardly, but I guess, I don't know what the best way to phrase is, but do you think like this was like a cop out? Do you think after, you know, like the players should, I guess, not be held accountable, but like after a loss, like they should, you know, at least address the media, even if it's like bare bones, or, you know, let them know like way beforehand instead of making the wait. Like, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. So I think, I commented on this on Twitter, after, you know, I saw it happen, and I probably misworded what I was trying to get across. And so I think there's two parts to this. And so you said it was a bit disrespectful. I would go a step beyond that. I think it's pretty damn disrespectful because of how they did it. I think these guys are they're super competitive athletes that get pissed off when things aren't going right. And so the rules of the league say you have to make yourself available after every game to Scott Kushner let me know about today, and that was a very, very fair point, and I think that's a standard that players should be held to. That being said, I understand every now and then not being frustrated, wanting to keep things in house, not wanting to talk to media. However, if you're going to do that, if you're going to break the rule, A, it better not be a common occurrence. You better keep it to a minimum. And B, don't you dare let the media sit out there for a half hour, 45 minutes before saying, we're not going to talk today.
Yeah, like that's kind of messed up, because like you're taking someone's time. You're taking someone's time that they're not going to get back. And so like when you are doing that, that's kind of messed up. That's definitely unfair. But like you said, like I think in my experience is the first time something like this has happened. It's not the first time they've waited. They do that after losses. They wait. They wait out the media. Like Rondo was the king of doing that to people. And I don't know if he started the trend. I don't think he did. But he was like it was like the art of war with him, where at practice sometimes he would just, you'd be waiting for him to give you a quote after practice, and he would just be there without a shirt, just shooting jumpers, and you just keep shooting and keep shooting and keep shooting until people just left, because like he didn't really want to talk to you.
He's still that bad of a shooter.
Yeah, I guess that's probably why. But yeah, I mean, you get the point. Like, I don't think it's definitely not a common occurrence. It doesn't happen all the time. But like, it is distasteful that after a loss, not only do you not speak to the media, you kind of like leave them out to dry for an hour.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and that's pretty much where I am. I just think if that's gonna happen, if you're just gonna kind of write off the media one day, you're just over it. You know, again, every now and then, fine. We can write a story a couple times a year without quotes coming out. Just don't make people wait around who have deadlines an hour to find that out. Just be straight up about it. And you know, if a fine comes with it, which maybe it should because you're technically breaking rules, then I'm sure the players will deal with that. But that's kind of where I'm at.
Right. Like, I don't think anyone would have had a problem if you were like, hey, guys, don't want to talk tonight. And the reporters would have been like, oh, okay, cool, I can just go home. Instead of getting home at like 11:30.
Yeah. Yep. But. Yep. So, real quick, I know we're probably about at time, but I don't want this podcast has been a very negative one for obvious reasons, but just to kind of end on a positive note, the West is still a mess, guys. The West is still kind of a train wreck. They're four games separate the 13th seeded Rockets and the 12th seeded Pelicans and the 11th seeded Timberwolves. They're all one game under 500. And
the Jazz are the second worst team in the West. I hate the Jazz. Rudy Gobert was like negative 25 tonight. They lost to the Indiana Pacers twice without Victor Oladipo.
I still can't get over the fact that the Suns this weekend beat the Bucks in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Like what? This is so
Jamal Crawford, baby. That's why they signed him.
Game winner. And so I guess even this is a kind of negative in a way, because every team besides Phoenix at this point is still in the thick of it. But every team is still in the thick of it. Like the Pelicans are they're half a game out of the playoff spot. They're three games behind the fourth seeded Grizzlies. It's everyone's still so tightly packed. Strength of schedules have been different across the board. Teams will move up and down. This is not a situation like if you're Cleveland sitting at 14th in the East and they're already 12 games back of the number one seed, whereas the 14th seed in the West is 5 games back. And it's just there's a ton of basketball left to be played. Obviously, we've gone over all the issues the Pelicans have had recently. but they got time to fix it. They don't have a ton of bad losses to pile up. I mean, the Knicks one was, in my opinion, was by far the shittiest one. Even the Wizards game was the second out of a back-to-back, and Eddie didn't play. So I'm not, you know, hitting the panic button too loudly just yet.
This is a different team when healthy. We know it. Yeah. But as history has shown us, who knows if we can rely on health.
Yep. So just keep it in mind. Don't burn everything to the ground. We're 10-11. it's
yeah. No, I see like people melting down, and it's like the first time they've ever experienced a loss in their life or something. And it's like, bro, teams lose. It's okay. We were 20-20, 40 games in the season last year. 40 games. Relax.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I vividly remember, I don't know if you do, around New Year's when we lost to, it was two really bad losses in a row. I think it was the Grizzlies and the Knicks, or the Mavericks. Kings. No, Mavericks Kings. And Knicks.
It was Kings the too. Kings and the Grizzlies.
I feel like we lost the Knicks in that series too, like right around New Year's Day.
Oh, we did lose to the Knicks. It was at home. Yeah. But it was Kings one that where Boogie got into a shootout with Z-Bo. And Z-Bo was like, in my neighborhood, bullies get bullied. And that was best quote I've ever heard in my life.
So we've been through this before. A lot of basketball to be played. A lot of who knows what other moves are coming. And just be thankful the team isn't 5-15. I mean, I'm not overly concerned yet. I'm concerned about the way the team has played recently.
I was going to say, be thankful we're not the Wizards, but the Wizards are doing well right now. Yeah. And we lost to them.
So, and very up and down.
Because we want their players, right? So, that's what's up.
All of them. Let's just take Porter, Beal, and Wall.
Yeah, straight up.
All right.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening, guys.
Hopefully we'll be back at you soon with a more upbeat pod. And, in fact, I would count on it the way this team's been up and down all year. But we'll catch y'all soon.